To close out the day, we have an interesting panel, How Can Blockchain Help Connect the Next Billion? I'd like to welcome our panelists, Anda, Salima, Gavin, and Rajesh, along with Naroa as moderator. Just a couple of quick words on Naroa. Naroa Ziratula leads the mapping and tech work for GIGA, UNICEF. Prior to UNICEF, Naroa lived and worked in various companies in Kenya, from a startup that is trying to change the world, understanding agriculture, to a nonprofit empowering local entrepreneurs through access to finance. Naroa holds a master's in electrical engineering from Stanford University and a master's in telecommunications engineering from EHU UPV. Naroa is also a proud EF fellow. Please join me in welcoming our panelists and Naroa.
Good. Hi, everyone. Can you hear me? Yeah, perfect. Thanks so much for joining us today, especially I know it's the last session of the day, so we appreciate you being here. And we actually have a quiet, interesting, and diverse panel here, so I'm sure that you'll enjoy the time. As the title says, we'll be talking about GIGA and about how blockchain can help connect the next billion. But what's GIGA? GIGA is a partnership between UNICEF and ITU to connect every school to the internet and every young person to information, opportunity, and choice. By connecting schools, we, on one hand, equip young people with the skills they need for the future, and at the same time, we build digital economies for the communities that are around these schools. There are many connectivity initiatives out there. I always say that what's different and unique about GIGA compared to others is that we use data and technology to make the whole process more efficient and more transparent, in particular, blockchain technologies. And that's why we are here today. The panelists will have a discussion about the blockchain applications they are building and that they are implementing and deploying in different countries. The applications go all the way from staking, NFTs, tokens, smart contracts, and others. And with further ado, I'm going to let each of them introduce themselves.
Okay, great. Hi, everyone. My name is Anda Ngaba. I serve as the Chief of Operations at the UCT Financial Innovation Hub, where we translate the latest academic research into novel blockchain applications. Before this, I served as an analyst at Convergence Partners, a TMT-focused private equity firm focused on sub-Saharan Africa. And great to be here. Thanks.
Thanks, Naroa, and great to be here also. Thanks for inviting me. I'm Rajesh. I'm one of the founders of LaunchNodes, and our whole reason for being is to help people become self-sufficient Ethereum stakers. So it's great to be here, and we're looking forward to sharing more.
Hello, everybody. My name is Salima Ba. I'm a state counsel from the Directorate of Science, Technology, and Innovation, which sits within the Office of the President of Sierra Leone. Over the past two or so years, I've been leading the project coordination as well as some of our policy work. Thank you.
And my name is Gerben Keine. I work as the blockchain lead for GIGA at UNICEF. Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
So Gerben, let's start with you. You work at UNICEF, and UNICEF is not the type of organization that people would think of that's working on blockchain, that's building tech products. Can you tell us a little bit about GIGA's tech team, how it works, what type of work you do?
Sure. So GIGA sits inside the Office of Innovation at UNICEF, and we're a kind of small team of like 40 people approximately, and we operate kind of like a startup within UNICEF itself. Are there any like blockchain developers in the room, maybe? Could you guys stick your hands up? Yeah, so we're growing our tech team. We actually have a position open right now if you want to come talk to me afterwards. Basically, so far we have connected approximately a million students to the internet, and the challenge that we really face is how do we connect the next billion. So to do that, we see blockchain sort of adding value in a couple of different ways. The first one is we estimate needing approximately $428 billion to connect the world schools. So our biggest sort of, our first sort of use case is moving all this money around and getting it to the right places in a way that's transparent and efficient and affordable. The second option that we see value in is automating payments for connectivity. So using smart contracts and monitoring connectivity in schools to automate payments to internet service providers. Then we also focus on NFTs. So at the beginning of this year, we launched the UN's largest NFT collection called Patchwork Kingdoms, where all of the royalty goes to fund Giga, goes to help support Giga. So that's kind of a neat thing. And we're also working on follow-up projects for that particular project. And we're also investigating like innovative financing solutions to pay for the operational expenses of connectivity. So one of them is connectivity credits. Another one is where we're looking at using staking to allow people to stake their ETH and generate returns for paying for connectivity. But basically, we work with governments to try to convince them to give us like a regulatory sandbox to try these things out, try them for the first time so that we can scale them up later and deliver some impact. So far, the most of the projects I mentioned are sort of in the MVP stage, and we're seeing some promising results, so we're looking really forward to making an impact in the coming years.
Perfect. As you said, I think for people that are not familiar with UNICEF, we operate in 190 countries, around 190 countries, and something special or different about us is that we work very closely with governments. That all the product solutions that Herman was describing, we work closely with governments to implement them in country. And that's where, Salima, you come from the other side of the puzzle, where you sit within the government of Sierra Leone. So I'd like to tell us a bit about this unique or different Directorate of Science and Innovation that you have in your country. How was set up, how it impacted the innovation ecosystem in the country, and the work you do.
Sure. So the Directorate of Science, Technology and Innovation was established by the current government in 2018. And the main mandate is really to leverage the use of science, technology and innovation to support the government deliver on its national development plan. So by that, we work across various sectors. And we've also developed a 10-year national innovation and digital strategy, which is our 10-year plan to digitally transform Sierra Leone. And we focus on three key areas, which is digital economy, digital identity, and digital governance. And as I said, because of where we sit, we really in a space where we're in a position to work across various sectors. That includes the private sector. We work with various private sector partners in Sierra Leone, out of Sierra Leone, to really support the development of our local ecosystem, because one of our aims is to really establish Sierra Leone as an innovation hub. One of the works that we've done is to kind of work with the private sector to develop an ecosystem mapping of the innovation sector in Sierra Leone, so being able to know what the different services and players are within the field. Other place where we work is we work with our public sector partners. That is all the different government ministries, departments, and agencies, basically supporting them in the different work that they're doing, seeing how they can use science, tech, and innovation to really achieve the government's agenda. And also, finally, one of our key areas where we work is our international development partners. We work with various international development partners, and one of our main partnerships has been with UNICEF from the start. The UNICEF Innovation Office in Sierra Leone has been really key to the work that we've been trying to do. And one area where we've really worked closely is to support the government in its education agenda, which is really the flagship of the government's human capital development agenda. We've With that, we've really worked on various projects, such as Giga, which we're talking about today. We've also worked on other, actually, even before officially Giga was announced, we worked with UNICEF to map the geolocations of all the schools in Sierra Leone. So that was really key, as in laying the groundwork for the work that we're doing now with Giga. But then one of the other projects that we're really also proud of that we've worked with UNICEF Sierra Leone is on learning passports, which is really a partnership with Giga. They kind of go hand in hand. So that's kind of sort of the work that we do within the space in Sierra Leone. And so we're really happy and excited to be here.
Awesome. And we'll be talking about some of this work in a little bit. Before that, now we want to... Can you still hear me? Yeah. We want to announce an exciting project that we've been working on for the last year in partnership with the Ethereum Foundation and the Rwandan government. It's the first time that we are publicly speaking about this, so we are quite excited about it. And yeah, the mic is yours.
Fantastic. Thank you for that, Nora. We have a video coming up very shortly which kind of explains more about this project. So rather than kind of spoil that, let me just give you the outcome. And the outcome is that Rwanda now has a solo staking infrastructure, which means that it can use staking rewards from staking Ethereum to fund internet connectivity in schools. And that's a world first and pretty exciting. That's been great. The other thing I'd like to say is we're really now at a stage where the proof of concept's been running for a year. It's been successful. We've seen the outcomes from that. And we're inviting the broader ecosystem to get involved. So we want our competitors to get involved. We want developers. We want other people involved in the Ethereum ecosystem to take up the baton now and to move this forward. No one entity can do this. Giga's been fantastic in kind of catalyzing the whole program. We've had support from the Ethereum Foundation and elsewhere. But 50% of schools in the developing world don't have internet connectivity right now. There's billions of dollars staked on the Ethereum network at the moment. Some small fraction of that could certainly help change lives. So that's really what we're saying here. And I think the final piece really is to say, the technological aspects of this were one part of the project, but really the other challenge was bringing people together, bringing people along this journey. 2 years ago, there was no such concept as Ethereum staking. It hadn't been launched. And yet here we are, effectively 2 years on, and the Rwandan government has done something which no other country has done so far. And that didn't happen by accident. There's been a lot of kind of negotiation, workshops, working groups, education sessions, briefings to bring us to this point. And in particular, leadership on the ground from the leader of UNICEF in country in Rwanda, Juliana, has been amazing. Minister Ingabire has also driven this project forward. We've had support from the Ministry of Education, Finance, Central Bank of Rwanda and ICT, and really everyone coming together and working collaboratively has made this happen, and it's a model now that we hope we can scale across the world.
Can I ask a quick sort of follow-up question about
please,
that?
Yeah, do.
So I'm sure all of you guys are wondering, like, why is this so complicated? Like, staking just makes sense, right? Like, why aren't we doing this? So maybe can we talk a little bit about like why is it so complicated to do this in a country like Rwanda?
Yeah, so again, 2 years ago, staking wasn't even a thing. And if you imagine the complexity of getting anything changed in a country, it's pretty difficult. I think Salima's probably got more insight into how to make that happen than anyone else here. But it does take regulation to change. It does take people to really grasp the concept. And we've been immersed in this for years, no doubt. A lot of the people here will have been involved in Ethereum and other blockchains. Explaining that to people and taking them on this journey isn't a straightforward thing. It takes a lot of courage, a lot of bravery, really, to kind of adopt this as a concept and to take it to government departments and say this is something we want to do. So a lot of that time hasn't been installing servers and putting software on devices. It's been around the table and with your support and Naroa's and others. So that's really why it's been complicated.
And I'd say that it's also linked to the regulation around crypto, whether a given country is allowed to hold crypto or not. So linked to that, for this first pilot, and after many back and forths, we decided that we're going to have the node hosted on the cloud instead of locally. Can you tell us about the why of this decision and maybe elaborate also on the pros and cons of each of them, like locally hosted versus cloud?
Yeah, so that's a great point. Along this journey, there have been a range of kind of key decision points. What Ethereum client do we use? Where do we want the infrastructure to be hosted? Should it be cloud? Should it be on-premise somewhere? And I'll start by saying our whole philosophy kind of aligns very closely with the Ethereum Foundation's, which is geographic diversity is key. And having diversity of kind of software client is really important as well. We don't want any we don't want there to be too many people hosting in one particular place. That's our strategy. And the reason I stress solo staking is so important is because it makes people self-sufficient, which again is part of our approach. So for practical reasons, for speed reasons, for resiliency reasons, it made sense to use the cloud for the proof of concept effectively. Longer term, we want every school to have a node. We want everyone to be, communities being able to stake and run their own infrastructure. And that would be a fantastic achievement when that happens.
Long way there, but I agree with that. And Salima, she's one of the first ones starting the journey towards that goal, where in Sierra Leone you are actually setting up or in the process of setting up a node that's locally hosted.
So I think we've gone, in terms of the proof of concept, I think we've started with looking at a physical hosting instead of cloud. But I think this is where collaboration, and one of the things actually we've also tried to do is engagement with some of our other government around who are also doing the same thing. We've had a couple of engagements with the Rwanda government, and the point is to really learn together, learn lessons, and making sure that we're all working towards the same goal. So for us, as I said, we've really looked at how we could lay the initial groundwork for hosting a physical node. As you said, obviously, we also want to be in the position where every school does have like a physical node, but we're not at that place yet, looking at the different challenges that we face. So one of the things which we wanted to do was looking at the possibility of hosting nodes with specific internet service providers. So for the initial preparation for that, we've kind of sourced the hardware that will be required. We have an agreement in place with one of our internet service providers who would also be one of the service providers actually providing connectivity to the school. I think we're in the last stage of preparation, and we're hoping, I think within the very near future, to officially launch our physical node. And yeah.
Fantastic. No, that's great. And another thing that we're hoping is going to be the norm moving forward is internet service providers taking crypto as well as payment, because what part of the hurdle right now is you'll have to convert from Ethereum to fiat currency to pay for a service. We've had conversations with ISPs where they've said no, we'll happily take payment in Ethereum, and that I think will be the future as well.
I think same as sincerely on the conversations we've had with the ISPs has been very encouraging. I think where the conversations now is at is with our other government partners, public sector partners, looking at the national, the Bank of Sierra Leone, who regulates that space, and the ministries of finance and that kind of sort of thing. Just making sure, I think the initial conversations around the legislative framework to do this kind of sort of thing, I think that's been the areas where we've been having the more conversations around, but then also making sure we have the infrastructure as well ready for that.
Yeah, and another thing to mention, I think, is the roadmap for Ethereum clients means that it will be a lot easier to host nodes. You won't need, you know, the resiliency and the, you know, to store full versions of the blockchain in the future. So again, it's going to get easier and easier for people to host their own nodes, which is fantastic.
What I find really interesting to sort of hear is it seems like everybody's kind of on board with this. Everybody like thinks it's a good idea, but still it's like so difficult. So how do we talk to governments and help them understand and help them shape their policy? I don't know, Salima, do you have any insights into that?
Yeah, as a government representative, I think it's a combination of several factors in terms of why we currently don't have it and what can be done. I think for me, where I see, I think that it's about highlighting where the opportunities are with this. I think, first of all, the opportunities with regards to blockchain, especially when we talk about Giga and how that can be utilized for smart contracts and used to improve the relationship with internet service providers, provide better accountability and monitoring and transparency. I think highlighting those opportunities are great in terms of getting everybody on board. But then I think also beyond that, there's a bigger opportunity with regards to most of these emerging technologies. When you deal with the government or traditional governments such as ours, I think it's about opening up the space for learning. I think it's about improving the local expertise within our different nations, and it's about improving awareness. So one of the things we're excited at DSDI about Giga specifically is looking at, because we believe in leveraging the use of the most high-tech technology you can find, as well as the most, not low-tech, but the most useful for our current situations. Looking at, we also utilize things such as USSD and those kind of platforms because we consider our local context issues such as electricity, internet penetration rates. So all those are important. But with Giga and blockchain and possibly even looking at cryptocurrency to as payments, the opportunity for this, our government, is to pilot these technologies within a very small space, which we'll hope then raise awareness, allow us to learn about these emerging technologies, then use the data and evidence to really develop really effective legislative and regulatory frameworks that would better support and enhance this. So we want to get ahead of the pace. We know these technologies are coming, whether we like it or not. So the opportunity with this is really to provide a pilot where we can really use this as an opportunity to learn much more about it, which would then enable us to better regulate it. So I think that's where the opportunities and the learnings, and it's about really showcasing that to get everybody on board.
Exactly, and showing its value, right? One of the challenges, I don't know if it's a challenge, but we usually face it that we have to communicate super technical and complex work to people that are not technical or don't necessarily understand the technology. And what happens sometimes is that if you mention the word crypto, smart contract, to someone that doesn't understand it, then they get scared and they just say, no, we are not on board. So the moment you start proving it, starting small and making small things and small steps, then I think they understand the value and they start becoming more comfortable.
I guess from our side as well, on your point, coming from an emerging market like South Africa, to drive cryptocurrency adoption, you need to meet them halfway. So one of our PhD candidates has actually developed a solution where you can send cryptocurrency via USSD and SMS. We're still looking for use cases. We've spoken to one ISP who actually approached us saying, ooh, this could actually work, letting people and communities pay for internet connectivity. So those conversations are still ongoing. But that whole project made us realize that we can't just ideate in silos and think, you know, people from South Africa or from Sierra Leone or whatever will meet us halfway. We need to go to them and bring the solutions to them. You know, even with speaking about blockchain and everything, they don't even have to necessarily know that there's a blockchain in the background. I always have this argument with people. They'll be like, you have to educate everyone about blockchain and this and that, but how many of us know how a light bulb works? You know, you just know, you turn it on. How many of us know how an aircon works? You just turn it on. So I think this view that you have to educate people about everything about blockchain and this and that for them to be onboarded is incorrect, and we should rethink that.
Ananda, we've been talking mostly about the public sector, but of course we also need the private sector and we need them to be on board to make everything work. And we all know that ISPs usually, for them it's easy to go to cities, to urban areas, and it's harder to convince them to go to more remote communities, schools. From your experience working with the private sector, what type of incentives, business models we need to make them also go to places that maybe are not as easy to connect?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's obviously tax incentives that South Africa has now put into place, but one thing we looked at is just tokenization now of the last mile infrastructure. So maybe you could have a big private sector player, a private equity firm, put the capital expenditure at the beginning and then resell that after 3 or 4 years when their fund life cycle is now coming to an end to local communities, you know, and then the revenue they're able to get in the interim can then sort of subsidize the resale price. So they may not need the large multiples that you need in terms of a general sale. And why something like that would also work very well, I know we once invested in a fiber asset in Ghana and a few other countries, and we're struggling to now, or we were struggling to sell it now to a third party because we could only sell it in the sort of the 25% we owned it. But if we could tokenize that 25%, we could sell it to local ISPs, we could sell it to people, you know, who have extra money when I just want to help other people. But because the framework wasn't there yet, we weren't able to do that. So, you know, on your point as well, how much was it? $428 billion, and on Africa alone, it's $100 billion. We can't look to the financing mechanisms that we've done in the past to sort of solve future issues. We have to completely rethink how we do it, and things like blockchain and tokenization, I think, will be, you know, the key to doing that.
I mean, absolutely. Like, nobody likes making banks even richer, right? So,
nope. Yeah. Not me. No, definitely not anyone at this conference either.
And that's something that Giga itself is exploring as well, this tokenization and building a token system that where schools are granted a certain amount of tokens based on how difficult it is to connect them, and then providers, if they decide to go to schools that are harder to connect, they'll get these tokens and they'll be able to exchange these tokens for a set of incentives. Maybe one thing there is that, again, for these incentives, we have to work with the public sector. So I guess highlighting the necessity to work with all the players in the market, all the way from the private sector to the public, and have them have conversations together.
Yeah, I think as well academia. So I now work at the University of Cape Town, and it's often a place that we don't consider. So we really now translate latest sort of academic research from a PhD, master's level to blockchain applications. And I think we also need to come to the table now because you need a new way of thinking. Like I was saying, a private sector company that's been making huge margins from selling connectivity for 10 to 20 years, they're not going to change how they do it. You know, you need new people now to come to the table and challenge the status quo, which is what we're trying to do at the Hub.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting sort of contradiction, because on one hand we have to like rethink all these things, and on the other hand, if you want people to sort of join you on the journey, you have to work with their systems and you have to, you know, make them understand that way.
And I don't see it as old world versus new world in the same way it sounds like you do. I think, you know, big corporates are coming along for the journey now increasingly. They're understanding what blockchain's about. They're looking at their own proof of concepts and pilots. And yes, you know, they've got other motivations potentially, but, you know, this is an opportunity for everyone, the way we see it.
And Anda, you work, again, closely with startups in the region. More in general, what are some of the trends around blockchain and around startups that you see in the African region?
So around blockchain, we're now seeing less financial sort of use cases. So we're now looking at a decentralized data marketplace where data creators can actually sell their data to other people. That could now be used maybe for connectivity, for example. We also have an NFT startup that is working with content creators to let them share revenue based on their contribution to a work. So he's particularly working with authors and wants to work with illustrators now. So if I write a chapter for a book, you write a chapter for a book, and my tree gets more views, we'll get remunerated more. So those are some of the interesting use cases we're seeing. The Mandla Money one I explained earlier about the USSD cryptocurrency payments as well. It's on the financial side. So it's quite an exciting space. And I mean, our Hub's only been operational for about 18 months, and we have 6 spin-off startups now. That's just come from academic research, which has been really beautiful to see.
Maybe some people here that are in the UNICEF Crypto Fund could also source some of these startups, no? And you could share.
I'll connect you guys, yeah.
Herven, following with trends, before you spoke about some of the past work or work that Giga has been doing, could you give us a sneak peek of what's coming next or what's next and some of the things that you are excited about for the next year?
Yeah, for sure. So the last year has really been about like building MVPs and talking with governments and getting them to allow us to do things. And I think we've made like a lot of headway with that. For example, we're now starting to roll out a product called Giga Accounts, which will allow payers for internet connectivity to monitor contracts, get sort of real-time data about the performance of the connectivity at schools, and then register payments for that. So we're quite keen to roll that out, and what we're hoping to achieve over the next year for that is to start issuing our first sort of smart contracts, I suppose. So the idea would be that an internet service provider would connect to school and then automatically receive payments if internet connectivity is detected. So that way we can make it way easier for internet service providers to receive payments and reduce a lot of overhead. So that's one of the projects that we're quite excited about progressing. Another one is we're building a sort of collection on top of our existing NFT collection. The original NFT collection, Patchwork Kingdoms, that we launched was all about fundraising. So you know, you purchase these tokens, you get a really cool sort of data-driven art piece, and the funds go to Giga to help Giga connect schools. What we're building next is a collection where we will create an NFT for every single school in the world. And really not put the focus on fundraising or raising as much money as possible, but instead sell these to people who care about the school communities, get them in the hands of the people who actually support these schools, and create a sort of gamified platform where we will reward people for contributing data about these schools. So we'll create a crowdsourced data system for collecting school data. And the idea is to make the largest sort of decentralized school database in the world.
And that raises many interesting questions, such as if you are crowdsourcing this data, what's the consensus mechanism that you'll be using to approve or to ensure quality of the data that you are gathering, and this type of like interesting new questions that we didn't have before.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've learned a lot at this conference about ideas like that. So it's been super useful to join this conference and learn more about that.
And Herben, a follow-up. We've been saying that sometimes it's sort of like it takes a lot of work to make changes within the government or make government bodies to innovate. UNICEF, it's not a government, but it's also a huge organization that has many, many processes in place. How is it to work in this type of things within UNICEF?
You're right. It's a very big organization. I think I come from sort of the world of startups, where things go super fast and you break stuff and you try again. So that's certainly a big difference. But I always like to sort of compare the progress UNICEF makes as like glacial. So it's like super slow, but it's unstoppable. So I think UNICEF opens a lot of doors. We're talking with central banks and ministries about implementing some real change in countries, and we're finding it really difficult to do that. So imagine being a startup and trying to get a meeting with a central bank governor to approve your well-intended sort of crypto project. So I think UNICEF has an important role to play there in sort of opening the doors for these kinds of things, opening the minds of governments, and allowing a lot of other startups to then make some real progress.
Salim, any advice on how to maybe interact or get that difficult meeting that Herben was talking about?
Yeah, sure. And I think one of the things I'll say, looking at the model that we have in Sierra Leone, is I think it's not just because I work there, but I think having institutions such as like the Directorate of Science, Tech and Innovation in Sierra Leone has been really key. I think especially when you work within developing countries such as Sierra Leone, where science, tech and innovation has not been a big player and the local expertise is not there, I think one of the, if I would advise, I think one of the key things would be for each government to have its version of a DSDI, as we call it, because I think it really cuts across and really enables that partnership to develop. I think we're lucky within DSDI to sit, as we call, play with various different individuals. We have lawyers, we have our developers, we have our data scientists, we have our policy advisors, and all of these individuals sit and enable us to do what we do. And I think that's why we were able to really form an effective partnership with UNICEF Sierra Leone and the Innovation Office. I think in terms of having one of the few like innovation work plans, annual work plans out there with UNICEF, I think that's been really key. And I think we kind of play the role with UNICEF of we develop our projects together, we establish our goals, and then DSDI plays the role of fronting with the government on behalf of UNICEF. So we would go to our government partners. And I think also the fact that we sit within the office of the president of Sierra Leone gives us a lot of leverage in terms of when we go and knock on those doors, like the National Bank of Sierra Leone, to say, together with UNICEF, there's this great project which we want to try out, deals with blockchain and crypto. Can you please, you know, engage with us on it? And they're willing to do that. So I think for me, what's really important is having that very high government and political buy-in into these kind of things. And then, and even with us, even though we have our challenges, but I could just imagine having to do this or trying to do this in countries that don't have that high level government buy-in, that could potentially be very difficult. So I think one of the key things that have been useful to us or have enabled us to have a lot of the progress that we have is having that seat and being able to interface with UNICEF, with our government development partners, with the private sector, with other international development partners. So being like in the middle of all of that and being able to coordinate it. I think that's been one of the key things.
So more than maybe to learn from and replicate in other places. Yeah, it's interesting, we met with the Colombia team earlier this week, and we were talking about the types of things that we could do together, how to start working in different aspects that we're discussing, and what we're told is that here it's actually quite difficult because they don't have this type of coordinating body that you have in Sierra Leone. What they were telling us is that there are Ministry of Education, Bank, Ministry of ICT, that each of them work on their own and that it's difficult to coordinate the work across all of them.
Yeah, and I think maybe just a quick nugget, I think which will be interesting. Actually, so the Chief Innovation Officer of Sierra Leone, who effectively leads DSDI, is also the current Minister of Basic and Senior Secondary Education. And a lot of our projects, as I mentioned, do deal with education. So I think that gives us an added leverage in terms of really being in the critical space to be able to coordinate all of these activities. So, yeah.
So a lot to learn, definitely. And it's been we've been working with you for many years now, and I think that the things that we've achieved wouldn't have been possible otherwise. Maybe as follow-up questions to both of you, what would be the main opportunities that you see with blockchain in your context?
From tokenization, like I spoke about earlier, we're also looking at blockchain actually for dynamic spectrum sharing, because in South Africa, a lot of the spectrum is owned by the large MNOs, and the small players don't have enough capital to obviously partake at the auction. But there is sort of times during the day where spectrum isn't that used by the big MNOs. So we're looking at now using blockchain for dynamic spectrum sharing, where an ISP in a small town like Grahamstown, where I went to high school, can now use spectrum from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., you know, at a lower cost than what they sort of use it during the day. So that's one interesting use case we're looking at, it, I guess, in this context. Yeah.
And thinking out loud, would it be possible maybe to do something similar also with pricing for connectivity, depending and apply something similar to that?
Yes, so the pricing now would be dependent on how much the ISP would get the spectrum for, and obviously when it's underutilized, the pricing would be less. So I guess that's the key premise. So it's still very early stages. The government announced it a few months back, and we just now started writing a few concept papers to see what we could do. But that would be the model, but we're hoping we can move forward with it.
And yeah, so from my side, I'm very much kind of immersed in the world of staking and just the possibilities that every individual can be supporting this network and can gain rewards from doing that. So whether it's a small community or a school or a project for climate change, we just see the march of technology enabling that more and more. So you know, we're working with a range of entities who want to use staking returns for different things. The beauty of this model as opposed to traditional kind of philanthropy is that you can put your money on a node, use that node for good, and then take your money away later and put it to do other things with it. So it's not a case that you have to donate and your money's gone forever. And I think that's quite appealing when the, you know, the need for capital for some of these projects is so vast. So yeah, there's lots of exciting kind of technological developments. We're just excited to be part of it.
And then as you said, maybe it's not huge values, but you can start distributing and decentralizing this hosting, and each school could have one node where the revenue maybe it's not huge, but enough maybe to pay for internet in their own school.
Absolutely, and you know, different models as well. So we touched on liquid staking, for example. Right now, it doesn't have to be the case that every school needs 32 Ethereum for its own school or multiples thereof. There could be, you know, liquid staking across Rwanda or South Africa or Sierra Leone, and different entities have different amounts, but they all gain staking rewards. So there's a lot of different avenues that this could progress through.
Anything you'd like to add, any of you?
Yeah, so I think the biggest opportunity I see is in moving all this money around. So paying for internet connectivity in countries that may have like a lot of corruption or something like that, I think blockchain can really provide a lot of transparency in that and a lot of fairness in that. So I think that's a huge opportunity.
I think going off, especially with the smart contracts and the real-time connectivity monitoring, I think for us, those have been really exciting on both ends. The private sector specifically are also excited about the fact of having a smart contract, and there's no discrepancy of whether how much connectivity did I actually provide in that back and forth exchange. So that's been exciting on the private sector space, because actually, so we have been in the process of connecting some of the schools which currently have connectivity to that platform to be able to monitor in real time. But then from a government perspective, it's also very important for us being able to really hold ISPs accountable to their service contracts that they signed, because before, if you have no way of really monitoring the connectivity that they provided, you're just really paying out without being absolutely sure that what you're paying for was delivered. So for a government perspective, that's been really important and one of the areas which we're really looking forward to exploring a bit more. Yeah,
absolutely, because usually what's the case is that for a lot of these schools, the connectivity is paid for by a government or, you know, a UNICEF country office or something like that, and then one person is responsible for monitoring 150 schools or 1,000 schools, and it just becomes impossible to sort of check whether the connectivity is actually delivered. And the schools themselves have no negotiating power with their internet service providers. So one of the products that we're offering to schools is this sort of application that they can install themselves on their network that will provide us with real-time internet connectivity data. So it's really a tool for them to sort of take control over that and allow a huge body like UNICEF to put their weight around making sure that internet service providers are providing the connectivity that schools deserve.
I hope that you all learned as much as I did. Maybe if you can go to the to the next slide. Oop, we have too many tabs open. Let's try the video now. Just to say that if any of the things that we spoke about seemed interesting to you, whether you are interested in joining our team, working with us, scan that QR code and sign up so that we keep you in our network and we can count on you in case you need your help. And yeah, the last thing is that we had a video that we wanted to show. It's not appearing here though, so I don't know if someone would.
Delivering school connectivity with Ethereum staking. GIGA is a global initiative to connect every school to the internet and every young person to information, opportunity, and choice. GIGA is leading innovative models and mechanisms to finance school internet connectivity over long periods of time, working in partnership with governments to build the right capabilities for the future. GIGA and the Ethereum Foundation are collaborating on an exciting and innovative approach to fund school connectivity. GIGA wants to use Ethereum staking as a new sustainable model to generate income to fund long-term social impact. Blockchains like Ethereum allow individuals and organizations to contribute to network security, availability, and processing power by staking funds while running their own nodes within the network. In return for providing this service, participants earn staking rewards. Ethereum is the most widely used smart contract-capable blockchain, and is now a proof-of-stake blockchain which effectively eliminated the energy usage that was associated with its former proof-of-work model. Anyone who commits 32 Ether can benefit from staking rewards. This model of staking provides regular rewards over many months and years, enabling a wide range of different use cases that can deliver societal benefits and social impact from the money that is earned. GIGA is working with the Ethereum Foundation and the government of Rwanda to provide the first example, providing funding for school connectivity in Rwanda. LaunchNodes is an institutional provider of investment-grade Ethereum, solo staking products and services, and was the implementation partner for this pilot project in Rwanda. How does it work? Number one, people and organizations that are interested in supporting school connectivity, who we call social stakers, commit Ether. Number two, GIGA stake the Ether by running validator nodes. Number three, the rewards generated from the nodes are used to pay ISPs on an ongoing basis to enable school connectivity over the long term. Number four, after the agreed staking period, the original Ether can be returned to the social staker or continue to be staked for ongoing school's connectivity. Number five, the value of the Ether may rise or fall over the staking period. GIGA has donated the first 32 Ether for staking, enabling the rewards to pay for connectivity at pilot schools in Rwanda. In the future, GIGA plans to allow people to pledge less than 32 Ether, which can be pooled and staked to support GIGA. This is a future functionality that is not live today. GIGA is setting up Ethereum validator nodes for schools in Rwanda in partnership with the Rwandan government.
Thanks. And if yeah, with peace applause, we can wrap up the panel. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all.
Thank you.